Hey guys, welcome to the re-release episode of my lovely friend and colleague Deborah Baker Jr. We are re-releasing her episode in honor of Stand Against Evil premiering this week, and also because I am in Tucson doing some family stuff that needed to happen. So I unfortunately didn't have time to record an episode this week, but it is for good reason. And I hope everyone's doing great. Enjoy the episode again, if you did already. And I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
So you better pick that up. You better pick that up, put it right in front of your face, hold it right up. What is this? Oh!
That's a pen.
Oh my God, this is just in time.
Yeah.
Oh, Deborah gave me a pin that I admired and loved very much, which
so I
is
went out and I got it right
a,
for her.
A poodle wearing a cute French outfit.
Yeah, it's a French poodle with
Poodle with a French beret. I think I told you. Did I tell you the actual words that are that's the most joy I think I've ever gotten on a set, which was, this is working on mutton stuff. Whereas listeners who listen to the Sam Levine episode know, we recorded in my trailer at Mutton Stuff when he and I were both doing the Halloween episode. But it's a bunch of dogs all dressed up in costumes. And it is a very, very efficient set because it has to be, because it has children, puppets, and dogs.
Yep.
And in the most serious voice, one day the first AD was like, "Who's got eyes on the doodles?" And I was like, this is my dream. I'm living in a world where you must have eyes on the doodles immediately because the doodles are needed to shoot something.
It's my favorite thing in the whole wide world. Oh, what a dream job.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a dream job.
So now every time I see anything approximating a poodle, it could be a labradoodle, it could be a poodle, it could be a labrador, I immediately am like, who's got eyes on the doodles? Urgently.
I gotta get you on that show.
Thank you so much for this pin. I cannot wait. I'm going to see if I can somehow incorporate it into my outfit this time. This time I understand that this may be a real spoiler, but I think I might work on a boat this time instead of a plane.
I mean, I think they should have you on all modes of transportation.
I think that's the plan.
I mean, they're going to go through everything.
Like, what's and the least expensive
Janet
set?
On a bike. Janet on a bike. You'll just be like pulling all
Janet
of them.
Janet is a Hell's Angel. Janet is a Hell's Angel. Wonderful. This is very long overdue.
That's okay.
We didn't do it in the summer because for some reason I was unwilling to record it and hold it until after Boys of Summer.
We just recorded fine. Nate.
But you were my
Andy Richter. I was in the corner with Nate.
So
I kind of feel like we've already done this.
And basically, like, everything that happened during the recording of Nate, I kind of wish that it was a video podcast because we would have a never-ending, eternal recording of what happens every time you and I are in a room with Nate, which is that when Nate is saying something, we're actually spending more time looking at each other, smiling and nodding, going, he's just the whole exchange is nonverbal, but it's like, he's the best.
Yeah, it really, yeah, best. I turn into a puddle.
You turn into a puddle.
I immediately, like, smile, and I'm like, ugh.
Like, I need a fainting couch, you guys.
He's such a joy.
So we obviously met on the set. We met like the day before we started shooting.
Mm-hmm. And we shot before we shot.
We shot our weapons.
Yeah.
You came with me. That was immediately a great sign. And was that this? But that was the moment I met you was when you came into the hair and makeup trailer, and we both were kind of getting our once over by our hair and makeup ladies, right?
Right.
Because you came in
as a blonde,
and you came in as a blonde, and then you had found out basically within that day they were like, "Go ahead and dye your hair brown."
Yep. So many new things happened to me in Georgia.
Yeah.
So,
but I do feel lucky that I got to see. I'm glad that because that was a big part of who you were before we met,
And so there's something for me that's satisfying about having snuck in and seen and met you in person as a blonde before brunette, because otherwise I would be this person who's like, I mean, I've never even seen you in person as a blonde.
Right.
But I have.
So many people believe wonderful. That I would look horrible as a blonde. I spent the whole, Nate and I flew together to Atlanta. We sat right next to each other. That's and I right. talked to Zeroff the whole time because mm-hmm. I instantly fell in love with him. And I was a blonde the whole time. So when he saw me the next time, as a brunette, I don't think he was like, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's a big difference. I guess it's a big difference whenever anybody does, but it was a big difference when you do it. Mm-hmm. But I think it looks so great.
Hey, thanks.
Now, let me ask you this. I recognize and acknowledge, and I do not in any way mean to downplay your love of Nate. I really don't.
That's all right.
But are you but are you the kind of person who likes to fall in love with people? Do you know what I mean? Are you the kind of person that also is like, I see the best in most people and I would rather feel, because that's sort of how I feel. I'm hoping to feel the very best about everyone of and course. That doesn't happen, but you know, yeah. it feels great to feel that way. Do you know yeah. what I mean?
Yes, 100%.
You're very good at loving the people that you love. And so that's why I'm yes, wondering.
I think I do. I think it's, I think the best, someone the other day was like talking about how horrible a certain person who's running for president is. And I was like, and they were like, I just hope they get shot. And I was like, they're in deep inside me somewhere. I'm like, but they're still a human. Even like, maybe people are going to really hate me for saying this, but like, even when like Osama bin Laden, like got killed and shot, what a horrible, horrible human he became.
Right.
But like, he was a baby once.
I know.
Like I always think like, maybe one day
yeah,
they'll turn around.
Yeah.
So I do. I wish the best. I mean, do I think I do not love those people? I don't. I'm a human. I have feelings. I know
yeah.
they're terrible, terrible human beings. But like, yeah, I do wish the best out of everybody. I keep rooting for them.
Yeah.
Even if they are a monster.
Yeah. I don't think I had a moment of, I can't say that. I mean, I don't want, and I don't want to tout us as being like above it all
no.
because I have just recently said, I think I even said it with Kirsten on our last episode, that I feel 100% capable of murdering someone.
Sure.
Like in a situation where everything, like I know I'm capable of making bad spur of the moment choices. Mm-hmm. I was just walking in the neighborhood in the late evening the other day and I was carrying a stick because we had the dogs with us and there were a lot of coyotes out. And I was like, you know what? This isn't going to be an issue, but I just would feel better. It's just the feel better thing, which
yeah.
by the way, is not that far away from carrying a gun. Like yeah. I understand that differently now. But I was like, if I just have this stick, I'm going to feel safer.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel like I can protect my family better. And all of that was going on in my mind. I was like, oh, this is a revelation. Interesting. Cause I don't really have that. I'd never shot a gun going back to us shooting together. And I was so sick to my stomach about it, kind of, but also like really excited and all of us having all those complicated feelings. And then, so I'm dealing with just the feeling of like, God, I really want to carry this big stick, President Roosevelt, and not speak softly. I also wanted to yell so the coyotes would be afraid of my size and loudness. But then we were walking up the hill and this car just came screaming around a corner and like zipped like hot rodding down the hill and we could have been hit. And everything in me wanted to hurl that stick at like the back windshield, like
yeah.
just break something, hurt someone. And it really took a lot for me to not do that. Like the stick was like leaving my hand and I was like, wait. What is everything I know about crime taught me? The other person could have a gun. The other person could have a gun. Like, don't. This is what my, you know, the handful of people I know who are in law enforcement or like DAs or whatever have always been like, it's never worth it. People are crazier than you are. And if
totally.
You want to do that and they have this, they can escalate it and you can die and it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
And so I taught myself, but feeling all those feelings all at once, it just reinforced that I have it in me. But
yeah.
that said, I felt real weird when Osama bin Laden was killed. I felt real weird when Saddam Hussein was killed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that I was like, I feel bad. I'm going to miss those guys.
No.
But I was like, this doesn't feel good. All it does is remind me of the heinous, horrible acts that have been committed by people like that. But it also made me uncomfortable. And all of that also reinforces, like, thank God I'm not in a decision-making position.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, men and women are equally capable of making those decisions, because to get to the point where you're responsible for those things, you're a very different kind of person than I am. I don't think it has to do with my gender, but I definitely don't feel like I could make that kind of decision.
Yeah.
You know?
No. I mean, obviously, they were, like, also psychopaths, so there's, like, a lot of chemical imbalances going on there and, like, just, like, power, whatever, but... I mean, oh, wouldn't that be horrible if I, like, turned out to be, like, one of those people?
Yeah. Would I want me to die?
I wouldn't want me to die.
It's tough, man.
Like, I don't, like...
I just don't know what to do in that situation. It's not like I'm like, well, guys, I have the answer. Don't worry. Chemical castration or life imprisonment. Yeah. Or, like, I'm not saying that's better or more... I don't know. I'm not saying that's more humane than just killing someone. I don't really know, but I don't want to make those decisions not knowing at the same time. You know what I mean? Unless I feel sure.
Yeah. My mom always had a really good plan. She was like, we should just ship them out to space.
That's how we get our space prison colonies.
Yes.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
Space Australia.
Yeah.
Look, Australia turned out fine. Australia. What a wonderful, charming country.
She's like, yeah.
Is that something?
Ship them out there.
Is that the kind of thing that she would have strong opinions about when you were growing up? Like, she would share her points of view liberally with your family.
We weren't even allowed to have, like, water guns in the house. Yeah. Guns were not toys. And then I went and married a Marine.
That's right. Good for you. Get them.
There's so many guns in my house.
Yeah.
I don't touch any of them. Yeah.
Is your dad like that too? Or was your mom more the loud voice of opinions and stuff
that? Like, when my mom and dad are in a room, my dad just, like, kind of sits back. But then if you get my dad by himself, what a goon. Uh-huh. Like, he's such a goon. My dad loves it. He's like a party animal. Yeah. But my mom always had, like, the stronger opinions. And I would talk to my dad, like, when my mom's not around.
Yeah.
Pushing the conversation her way.
Okay, listen, now I got you. Let me get to the bottom of this. Yeah. Well, and your parents are still together.
They are.
Tell us how many siblings you have. I forget with people whose stories I know that I need to make sure that everyone else does, too.
I have one sister, one brother, and then I have another... Let's call her my sister.
Because you do.
Because I do. Who I'm not related to by blood, but is part of our family. So I have two sisters and a brother. And both my sisters are happily married. And one of my sisters has two beautiful girls. So I'm an aunt. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And where did you grow up?
Boston. I grew up in Boston. Mm-hmm. I was born in Baltimore. And then I grew up in Boston.
Boston proper?
Mm-mm. No. In Wellesley.
Okay.
And then...
Is that where a college named Wellesley is?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Great.
My grandmother that checks out. There.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's like a...
way later in life.
I'm sorry. Where did Mona Lisa Smile take place?
Wellesley.
It did?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I know that there are some different schools.
Check me on that. Sure. But I'm 100... Yeah. I feel like it's Wellesley.
Yeah. That's why I asked, because I thought, if it's not that, then that's what I think of when I think of things like that. The sort of Dead Poet Society for...
My boarding school was exactly like that.
It was?
Mm-hmm. I went to all-girls boarding school in Virginia, and it was very much like Mona Lisa's
Smile. When did you start going to boarding school? How old were you?
Freshman year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's an early time.
Totally.
To go
it's
away.
It's an East Coast thing, though. Like,
yeah, it is an East Coast thing.
Most people go to prep school.
Yeah.
Freshman year.
Yeah.
And, like, go away.
Wait, when you say most people...
My circle.
In my circle growing up, most people went.
Right.
Not most people. Thank you, Janet.
I'm just bringing that up because...
I grew up a real big wop and clearly have no pulse on what's actually...
I was like, who is filling up all those public schools?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Your peer group. Most of your peer group went. Mm-hmm. Did you have a lot of friends go to the same school, or was that a real... Like, was that a scary thing to have your friends up till eighth grade that then everybody kind of shipped out and went somewhere else?
No, that wasn't ever a thing. We moved down to Florida when I was in third grade, and we had a house down there. My parents were like, you know, let's go be those snowbirds, but with children. Uh-huh. So we moved to Florida, this tiny little barrier island, which I adore, called Boca Grande. And it's on the Gulf side. It's like a half a mile wide and a mile long or something
Is it near Boca Raton?
Mm-mm, other side.
Oh, okay.
Other side. The other Boca.
I see. I see. The other Boca.
Yeah. And so I was down there from like third grade to eighth grade, and I bounced to two different schools there. And so the school that I did go to from sixth grade to eighth grade was over an hour and a half away in Sarasota. So it was, I don't know, I was always...
You didn't have that attachment to school of like, guys, no, this is it. Our school. Yeah, like, what are we going to do? We're, you know, we're not going to see each other. You were ready.
I was always really awkward, always bullied. It was horrible. I hated school. Plus, on top of that, I was dyslexic. So school wasn't like fun.
Right.
In any aspect. It wasn't like, I'll just hang out with my friends.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have
like
any.
A stressful. When were you diagnosed? Like,
really, really early,
which
actually.
Which is great.
It's really great. My dad runs the Dyslexia Foundation. So he's dyslexic. My grandmother's dyslexic.
Is that something that tends to be genetic? I guess I don't know how that works.
It is genetic.
And have they identified parts of, I'm sorry to be so ignorant about it.
No, that's okay.
I feel like I think we all have a working understanding of it in a way that we don't necessarily, rarer things. But when I really think about it, I don't know about the way it works the way I know about like fragile X or like certain forms of, you know.
It's such a, for my dad running this foundation, my sister is really the one to like talk to about this because she like helps him and is so smart and doesn't have dyslexia. it's such a, there's no two dyslexics that are the same.
So they're beautiful snowflakes.
We are beautiful, beautiful snowflakes.
Yeah.
So that makes it hard. So exactly what you just said, that of course it's hard to like pinpoint because some dyslexics really excel in sciences where other dyslexics, I would say most dyslexics excel in the arts because it's the other side of things and expressing yourself. Almost all dyslexics have trouble reading can't read. Me particularly, it's trouble reading, trouble writing, math, woof. And when I get really, you know, frustrated, the words are there, but I can't get them out.
So
I'll either stutter or I'll invert my words or I'll say one thing, but unless you really know me, you'll be like, wait, what? Or like, I know what you meant.
Right.
So often I am constantly like, I'm hyper, hyper sensitive, especially around new people or in the work environment, especially my work environment. I'm always like, oh my God, just like take it slow. Don't come off dumb. Because it does. It comes off really like either you're very ignorant or not educated because you will misspeak. And it's like, no, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant to say. Now I feel like such an asshole.
Sure. Did you stutter when you were a kid? Did you have anything that manifested itself with regularity in that way that was noticeable to other kids other than just your schoolwork or your...
No, I was like when I was little, especially because my dad's foundation, we traveled the world and we were constantly with different researchers and meeting all these really fancy pants people. I had no trouble. It wasn't until I was in school and started reading and having to actually do, you know, the letters and things like that I even knew that I was like any different or a different learning style. But my parents were really good about like picking up on it really fast. And I had tutors my entire school career. And it was just knowing they taught me early on, like if you don't understand something, you raise your hand and say, excuse me, can you explain it a different way?
Yeah.
Because typical brains understand things like to get to the solution, go A, B, C, where a dyslexic brain might have to go A, F, G, C to get there.
Right.
You know, like you just, it's a different path. It's a different way of seeing things or maybe just doing it backwards. So it was a lot of like, can you just explain that differently? I really don't get it.
Yeah. Did you have things that that kind of became staples for you of like, well, this is how I approach memorizing a script or this is how I would have to approach this thing. Like these are the tools that I kind of built for myself because everyone's different. Every dyslexic is different. So there are certain maybe suggestions or guidelines are like, oh, this is sort of a method that works for someone that I know and I was able to kind of adapt it and my approach is this, or is it as simple as, you know, you just have to take it slow and be patient?
I, for me personally, I don't know for other people, I just had to take it slow and be patient, and also just be like, as soon as that little voice in my head is like, this is too hard, this is like overwhelming, I'm done. So it was, you absolutely can do this. You are going to get it. Just do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I had to work really hard on, memorization, but I'm a champ when it comes to cold reading now. It's
Yeah, you are.
It's just,
I remember, if you don't mind my saying, you were a little nervous about Plan 9 and you were so terrific and wonderful. No, but, like, but here's what I'm going to say. This is what we all do. Anybody who has a thing that they feel sets them apart in some way, in a negative way, we do the same thing that anyone else would do, but we ascribe it to their our thing. So, like, I flubbed a couple of lines, and I didn't think twice about it because I'm not dyslexic. So I was just like, that's life. But you might go, well, that's probably because blank.
Sure.
And same thing with me, or, like, friends of mine who have had, you know, histories with mental illness. Like, somebody will be like, I'm obsessing over the fact that my girlfriend cheated on me. And I'll be like, hey, don't worry. Everyone obsesses about that it happens. Like, that's not, you think that's a you thing because you're, you know, putting it into the category of I'm not, this isn't okay, I'm scared, I don't like this feeling. But, like, that's a human thing.
Yeah.
And that's a nice thing to kind of get, be able to check in with. It was like, maybe this is just what happens to everybody. Yeah. It might happen to me more often, but also it's just like a thing that happens sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I definitely have gotten way better at it, it not letting it affect the work. But, yeah. Yeah, that's I mean, that's my only advice.
Well, what about in high school when you went away to school? Did you know going in when you went away to boarding school that you would have tutors there, or by then were you sort of like, I got this?
No, I did. I had tutors there as well. My parents were really straightforward and with the school, and, you know, I got a language waiver, and they, you know, they were like, you know, she has a learning difference and she's going to have to go to the lab and, you know, with the extra help with the teachers and things like that.
Does a language waiver mean you didn't have to take a foreign language? Because that's like kryptonite.
Yes.
Yeah. I can understand
that. It's great if I'm in a room and someone's talking to me, I'll probably pick it up a little bit faster. And when I was little, I picked up very fast. As soon as I try to read it or you do it slow, I can do accents like that. Mm-hmm. I can do, if you talk to me and I can get it. But it was looking at the words and then trying to read the words in a different language. It, like, I can't do it in English.
Yeah.
So, let's not even get into like all the rest
That's hard. Yeah. That's because I took two different languages and I still feel like, when I think about just having to sit and write in it, it's just a whole different thing. It's like so much about knowing, like, learning a written language like French was more like math to me than any other creative arts or, you know, what language sciences, that sort of thing. It was because it became this sort of technical formula thing that my brain would just sort of go, no,
yeah,
this isn't gonna stick.
Yeah,
you know,
100%. Yeah, oh yeah. But I was so fortunate because my class at Foxcroft was only, I think we graduated with 25 girls.
Yeah,
what a great ratio.
Did you wear uniforms and stuff?
No, it was just dress code. Some days we wore the Foxcroft uniform for, like,
what's a dress code? What was the dress code?
Khaki or black pants or skirt, and a collared or button down shirt.
Understood.
Could be belted in or out.
Did you have other people who've done the podcast definitely had the experience of, like, finding ways to be very creative and expressive within those confines, kind of like, you know, writing a sonnet with certain words or whatever. And then other people say, like, it just made no one care about what they wore, so we were focusing on other things.
Yeah, I mean, it was an all girls boarding school, so it wasn't like, we definitely had our own flair within J. Crew.
It was like a work it. I've seen those catalogs. Listen, they really know how to make them stylish.
But yeah, it wasn't as a big deal. And being dyslexic, I felt so fortunate that I didn't feel like an idiot raising my hand asking a question in a class because, you know, Joe Schmo over here, like, oh, he might be looking at me and think I'm an idiot. I feel very fortunate. And it was, of all my schooling, which was for the most part, really painful and horrible. Foxcroft, those 4 years were some of the best 4 years of my life. And those are my closest, closest friends. And to this day is like the most magical, like special place to me. And if you ask any Foxcroft girl, which is like really crazy because I've come across, we all wear the same ring. And I wear this ring like every day. Someone the other day was like, are you wearing that ring in the show? And I was like, mm-hmm, I am.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that that was your Foxcroft ring.
It's the same ring that's been around for over 100 years. So every single Foxcroft girl has the same one.
I'm envious of that. I wish that I had that relationship too. Because I liked school enough. The kids I had problems with, and not all the teachers were amazing, but actually, I really felt very trapped in school most of the time. But I liked the idea of being moved and inspired in school, because when I would latch on to a subject that made me passionate, it was like incredibly exciting and so cool. And I think I would have really loved that, because that is such a specific age where you're still quite young to be living away from home, to create that feeling of community and to create that sisterhood. That really sounds, it does sound magical to me.
Yeah. And unlike some boarding schools where it's very like cookie cutter and like filtered right into all the Ivies, the headmistress at the time was very passionate about being like, we're not a cookie cutter school. And each girl here has something unique and special to bring to the table. And we ran the morning meetings, and we ran the school, and we each were able to find truly what we were passionate about and really focus on that. And it wasn't so much about like standardized testing and things like that. Like in history class, if we really got into this amazing conversation about, I don't know, Genghis Khan or something, our history teacher was so just like jazzed that we were interested that he didn't care that we didn't get to the rest of the lesson plan. He was like, no, let's have this conversation because this is more important than checking off X, Y, and Z boxes. And I found that in almost all my classes, that they really catered to the students, and they were just jazzed about like the kids there and really like, what are you guys interested in? Like, let's keep you excited
about the learning process.
Oh my God. And there were so many things for us. Like we all played sports and there was music and there was art and there's so much art. And it's a huge horseback riding school. I didn't ride horses, but I was, you know, on the stage. But it's like the number one horseback riding school in the nation. So there's just so much to do there. On top of all these amazing traditions that aren't necessarily academic based. So you can still thrive and not feel like you're drowning there just because you're not doing well in school.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things you can do well in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so cool.
Were there like scholarship kids that would go there? Yeah.
Because
it's such a small class. I was wondering like how much of that could have been accommodated with like needing just to have the expenses at the school met.
Yeah, my class was particularly small. My sister was a freshman when I was a senior, and she I think had like 45 girls. But all girls schools, especially like prep schools, are, you know, a dying thing because most prep schools, the husband gives the money to his school, not the wife's school.
Yeah.
So
even within the sort of waspy, to use your term, world that like I can't even like the, like you have to know that first of all you are so grounded and so generous and so humble and so sweet and so down to earth and so involved in, you know, sort of the every person that and I know some of what you've done for a living and all that kind of stuff, and I just don't feel you take anything for granted. So that's not like that. But you know that, like, for me, the idea, like, just hearing the husband gives his money to his school, I think about my dad in his school teacher salary and, like, me being given, like, my $3,000 for college. Like, hey, you know, whatever it was. Like, good thing you got a full ride, buddy. It's like, it's so amazing to imagine. I mean, that is sort of a fairy tale world to me, you know?
It's a dying world, too. Like, I mean, thank goodness I had parents who, there was so much more to life than any of that sort of cookie cutter world.
Yeah.
I mean, they let me go to acting school. They didn't care that I went to a conventional college. They were like, no, this is what you really want to do. It's what you've always wanted to do. Like, yeah. Go do it. You're great at it. So whereas, like, you know, their brothers and sisters are like, oh, but what's her backup plan?
Right,
what's,
right.
Oh, is she ever going to really go to college? Like, who's she going to meet out there? Like,
right.
And my parents are like, no, she's great. This is what she's doing.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But my mom didn't grow up in that world, and my dad did. So I think...
And where's your mom from?
She's from Wellesley, which is very, like, hoity-toity now. But, like, when she grew up... It was still, like, a pretty nice town to live in outside Boston.
Culturally, she comes from a totally different background, doesn't she?
She does. My mom's Lebanese. Mm. But... They weren't really they were raised in the Catholic Church, like,
gotcha.
Boston Catholic, gotcha. You know, whatever. My grandmother was a very prim and proper Catholic woman, but was also very Lebanese.
Yeah.
So she loved the hummus.
Yeah. Were you religious when you were in when you were a teenager? Did you have a relationship to God or anything? God, I should say.
Spiritually, yeah. But my parents, when we moved to Florida, we'd never gone to church. My parents were just, like, not into that. Because I think they were both raised pretty religiously. Not my dad's side, but my mom, definitely. My dad's side just went to church because that's just what you did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then had your G&Ts.
Uh-huh. Sunday, baby. Sunday worship.
But, yeah, I went to church with a classmate one day, and I came home and I was like, Mom, like, I think I was like, did you know flamingos were made on day 7? And my mom was like, okay. So she ran the Sunday school at this Episcopalian church that was like all old people and then us. And she was like, and she made it very clear. She was like, I don't care what you believe in. This is a religion that I want you to know about,
mm-hmm.
and you get to choose what you believe in.
Nice.
So take it or leave it. And she was very, very clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all three of us are spiritual, but not necessarily religious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about boys? How do they factor in when you're at boarding school, when you're a adorable dyslexic boarding school attendee for some of the year, and then you come home during the breaks?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Yeah.
Did you have any boyfriends?
Mm-hmm. I did. I would have... So there was an all-boys boarding school.
Got to be. Listen, again, like I couple. Have seen Mona Lisa Smile. I have seen Dead Poets Society.
It sounds so gross, but, like, we would get in buses, and they would ship us over there, or they would get in buses and ship us over to our campus, and we would have mixers on the weekends at different schools, and we'd all get dressed up, and they'd put all these, like, hot, sweaty teenagers in, like, a room to dance. Like, mingle. Yeah, so I mean, if that counts as a boyfriend of, like, talking on the phone late at night.
Sure.
We didn't have cell phones when I was at boarding school, so we all had these pay phones in all of the dorms. Spent some long times in those pay phone booths.
Uh-huh, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if that counts as a boyfriend, seeing them and talking to them, then yeah, that's what I had. And then there were some boys on my vacation time, but
mm-hmm.
Only a couple times a year. Yeah.
Well, like, there's got to be a different relationship to, like, you know, getting interested in someone on vacation when you have this finite amount of time before you know you're going to be in a totally different location for the rest of the time. It's mm-hmm. very different than, like, you know. And then we went back to school again in the same place and continued to date or, you know.
Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah, because I had... So I feel like I'm coming across as like this like really spoiled rich waspy kid. But so I went to boarding school, and then I had my home in Florida when I would go to, you know, for Christmas and Thanksgiving and spring break. And then on the summers, we went back up to Boston to the summer home. So I had, you know, my summer flings. And then sometimes for a month I was out in California at tennis camp where the heavy romance would happen.
Oh yeah. California dreaming.
Oh yeah.
I hate Ooh. Myself for saying that.
Ooh. Tennis camp.
What was different about that? What made that so extra sexy?
Well, first of all, we all had to wear tennis whites at all times. So.
Fair enough.
Yes, please. No, I mean, it was just like summer camp. So it's like, you know, summer romances. There were none. There were none to be had for DBJ. But man, oh man, did I crush hard.
That does seem like a good place. Where was that? Where in California?
In Carmel Valley.
Okay.
John Gardner's Tennis Ranch. Beautiful, beautiful.
Listen, that sand, you guys. That sand in the Carmel area.
Ooh.
So pretty.
Beautiful.
And the water's so green / blue. It's really nice.
That's how I first fell in love with California, was that I used to come out here in the summer times.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I think this is the place for me.
Yeah, no kidding. You sort of felt that in your bones, like, something about this.
Like, my parents' friends that I would stay with before I would go to summer camp were always just so way more laid back. Like, I got to call them Tom and Wendy. I didn't have to call them Mr. and Mrs. Where on the East Coast, there was no first name basis on them.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, they're groovy. And, you know, they were just so much more laid back. I was like, I think this is a little bit more my speed.
It's almost like what has just happened to me now. I love that I have to like put it into a context of a movie or a book. Now what I've moved on to is you are both the two real Hayley Millses. You could go Lindsay Lohan if you want, but I prefer to go with the original Parent Trap.
Let's go Hayley Mills.
The two Hayley Millses have merged back into the single Hayley Mills that they always were. And you are having that sort of like upper crust East Coast experience. And then the dad's ranch house, even though it's your friend, it's your family friends, ranch house is like where you really let your hair down. And like, that's where the ladies actually wear like capris and like a white shirt, crisp white shirt, but it's like tied at the waist, where over there the woman would still be wearing it. And also you grew up in the early 50s. Yes. In my mind.
Yeah. I feel like I did too.
I guess all of the things I'm talking about are all set in like the more innocent time too, where you only went to Wellesley to get a husband. Like I can't think of a single thing I've seen that's a contemporary version of that. So I have now jettisoned you into the deep past. Well, I guess it's sort of a recent past, but
I kind of feel like I was living in those times anyway. So that's fine. That's valid.
Yeah. I wish that my experience of being in Arizona was the kind of cinematic expectation equivalent of that. And I could be like, well, as you know, I grew up on a ranch in Arizona where I looped and lassoed cattle for the summers because we did have rodeo vacation. And I have 5 cowboy hats. And I also am a drug mule that I go over the border into Nogales.
But I feel like I stay grounded throughout it all, though. Like,
doubt of that.
Like, my mom was really adamant about us all having a really strong work ethic, and she made us work at a very young age and like babysit and be responsible. And
so I think some parents, especially if there's any part of them that has any kind of and it certainly has nothing to do with, well, it doesn't have to have anything to do with race, but it can have to do with class. If there's any kind of a class greed, I mean, like a concern of seeming greedy and having guilt about that, like that there's sort of that, like I didn't have to have a job. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have to have a job until I needed a job when I was in college. But there's sort of a pushback against that. That's like, oh no, you're going to fucking be in the real world, kid.
Yeah. When I moved to LA, my parents definitely helped me out, but they were, you have to get a job. Like, we're not helping you unless you get a job. And so I waited tables. I waited tables and babysat and bartended and,
And you worked with kids with Down syndrome too, I think, didn't you?
I did. After I got burnt out waiting tables and doing all of that, I decided, what else could I be doing in this town that could be a little bit more fulfilling? And a couple of my buddies were working at the special needs early intervention program, and they loved having actors because they were like incredibly enthusiastic and the kids loved them, and they're like, just come and like see if you dig it. And 18 months to 3-year-old kids, and I would just sit there crisscross applesauce and get to read books and use all my voices and talk to the kids. And I feel like I relate to kids really well, even though I'm not probably going to have them in my life.
Well,
I like other people's kids.
I feel the same way. And I think that's like the volunteer work that I do, or even just hanging out with my friends' kids. there's a the feeling of guilt I have is when parents or, you know, parents in these volunteer groups and stuff are like, you're just so great with it. Thank you. Like, like that sort of pulling you aside and being like, thank you for hanging out with August all Thanksgiving. She really loved that. Thank you. As if I made a sacrifice, when the reality is like, oh, no, no, that's where I wanted to be. I'm a child. Yeah. If I can use that in some positive way to be of help in any kind of environment, great. But it ain't like I'm like, oh, here we go. I got to read this really awesome book with this kid and use voices and like make them smile. That's really sucks.
No, I almost feel bad leaving because I'm like, I think I liked that a little bit too much. Like, right. I think that was a little bit more for me. yeah. No, but that was great. And I worked with kids and at that Therapy West, it was an early intervention program, alongside, you know, therapists, and until I just decided to just do babysitting, and then now I don't have to do it anymore. But I still love all those kids.
Yeah, I gotta get you roped into the that one thing that I do sometimes, because I think you would really have a good time.
I really do too.
Yeah.
I'm really bummed that they missed the last one.
Well, that's you're working. Well. that's how that works.
Yeah.
It's really okay. Are you excited about the elections? You know, this is a mostly political podcast. I'm not sure why I waited 40 minutes.
Yes.
Are you nervous?
Yeah. I mean, who isn't nervous? Yeah, it's
I'm
such
a little
like,
nervous.
It's such a, like the energy out in like, sounds so hippy dippy, but like, it's true. Like everybody is on edge. Like at work today, everyone's like, okay, well, tomorrow's the day. See you guys all tomorrow.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, like, I don't know.
Yeah. I was really worried, and then I listened to two podcasts today kind of while I was working that I highly recommend to everyone. Their podcasts everyone hears me talk about all the time anyway, which is Radiolab and This American Life. But This American Life has been doing the most wonderful coverage. This girl, Zoe Chase, who's like my current favorite kind of podcast journalist, she does a bunch of stuff. I think I've brought her up on the podcast before. She has the most adorable, I'm not sure where she's from, but it's like Minnesota, Michigan, someplace in there. So everything kind of sounds like this. So she's talking about stuff and everyone's name is like Deborah Baker Jr. It's so over the top. When you first hear her voice, you're like, oh boy, this is, she sounds like she's doing a character. Like, I'm not sure. And so quickly I was like, oh no, now she's my favorite, because she doesn't have any kind of affectation, and there's something about her that's so human for that reason. And she's clearly like young and interested in people. And I think she is another example of like, I felt really weird about Osama bin Laden getting shot. Like, that's sort of what I would imagine her saying also. But she spent so much time, this whole era of what's been going on, really digging deep into small communities of people and their relationship to the Republican Party, and being so, and like humanizing so many people, and really like looking at those rifts that are happening between conservative, like religious conservatives who can't fathom how Donald Trump is the candidate, to young gay kids who think Donald Trump's awesome and is the answer, to, you know, just everything she can kind of get into. And it's that thing where you're like, I want to know who these people are. Yeah. She's really made that her goal. And so they've done this wonderful job with that. And they really haven't done much with, I think they know their audience, and they're like, everyone who listens to us probably doesn't know this, but does sort of know a little bit more about like the Hillary side. But then they just did a really interesting piece on Hillary. And I still think, I mean, it's a liberal, sure, you know, I wouldn't say that they are, you know, partisan, but I can't imagine that they don't have a sense of who their listeners probably are. And my guess would be, if I had to make a guess, which is what I'm doing, that they are largely, you know, educated liberal listeners, opposed to educated conservative listeners. That's just my guess. Mm-hmm. But they did a really interesting, story on Hillary and the whole email thing based on like a Politico article, which was really like, listen, there's a lot of scandal and there's a lot of stuff that's like real meaty about things she's done that you can question, and you can kind of like with anybody, you can go, this will either argue further towards me hating her, or it will argue towards me liking her, or I will find a way to be okay with it if I like her, and I will find a, you know. But this idea of like the email server thing being like a stumbling, bumbling, bureaucratic, short-term solution to like the fact that she's a Luddite, instead of this big conspiratorial, like, oh my God, she had a private server. It's like, well, the scandal is the woman doesn't know how to use a laptop computer, which let's talk about that, because that's kind of crazy if she's going to be our president. But it's a different kind of scandalous than, you know, these. It just sounds to me like a bunch of, you know, overworked, like, people who are just like, she can't, she won't carry two devices. Like, there's just no forethought. And that's, again, not an excuse at all. And it does not, I feel it doesn't pull punches on saying, like, here's, you know, here's what Hillary's known for. She comes to the table and fights for what she can when it suits her, and she'll disappear when it doesn't. So, you know, you can definitely be critical of it. But I think it did a good job of saying, like, let's make sure we're being critical of the right thing if we're going to be critical about it, which I thought was really interesting. But anyway, I kind of walked away feeling calm. I walked away listening to both. And then the Radio Lab one was just about how every vote does count, and was sort of a very sweet kind of idea. And I did walk away feeling like, okay, listen, we're going to be okay. Look, maybe this is democracy working the way it's supposed to, because it gets to be broken in this way, and it gets to be put back together, and we get to have these conversations. And maybe that's the epitome of democracy, is that it's a fucking mess.
Right.
Instead of, we don't get to be scared about what's happening to the Republican Party, and we don't get to wonder how we ended up with, you know, people we feel may be criminals running and all those kinds of things. Like,
I don't know. I'll be relieved once it's over, but maybe I won't be relieved. I don't know, but I think it's,
and like, what does over mean?
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
We'll be relieved, I guess, when we don't have to listen to campaign speeches and slurs as much. But
right. I mean, will it even be over? You're right. You're totally right. But I don't know. I think there's such like a stick. I feel fortunate to be around a lot of like-minded people who are very open and liberal and have the same views as I do. And, you know, there are people back east, and I have family members who do not agree with me. But I think it's so interesting that they just don't want to talk about it. I like, you know, I'll ask someone, they'll be like, you know, my dad's voting for Trump. And I'm like, why? Or my mom's voting for Hillary. Like, I think it's so important to have those conversations rather than be like, well, I don't want to talk about it. Like, they're voting for that person. Like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, have the conversation. Because I feel like there's so many people who are just doing it because, well, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Instead of, like, really breaking it down. I mean, I guess it's a little too late to have this, like, soapbox moment for myself. But
well, I was just curious. I mean, again, I think it would be, that's what's going on. It's like, it's a big deal. And so I haven't really talked about it that much, but it does creep in because it is something that everyone's kind of bombarded with all day. And
yeah. But I do think like, I'm interested to listen to that podcast because it's like, I'd like to, when we were in Georgia, I would talk to the officers there, or I would talk to, you know, some of the people working on our crew, and they have very strong views that were different than mine. And it was just like, oh, okay, but they weren't horrible people.
Mm-mm, right. Absolutely.
They were some of the kindest people I've ever met.
Yeah.
So it's like, they're not monsters. It's just the way that we think one way is the way that they think another way, and are so in their ways about it. So, but I think it's important to have those conversations. I mean, we definitely had some people on the crew who would like ruffle feathers for some of these people and would just like ask questions just to be assholes. But I don't know.
Well, I think it's,
we're a country made up of different opinions.
Absolutely.
And ideals, and that's a good thing.
I strongly encourage people, and you particularly, based on what you just said and our experience in Georgia, to listen to This American Life. It's called Will I Know Anyone at This Party? And that is one of, it's got a great Zoe Chase article, great Zoe Chase piece in it. Segment?
Great.
Feature? Yeah. that is about this, and Donald Trump was just there talking about it. Guys, for those of you who do not tune in for political reasons, just know that I'm talking about purely the emotion of politics. So at least you're still getting like par for the course for me. But the, because that is what makes it fascinating to me and like hurts my feelings on both sides and sort of confuses and scares me and also inspires me and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, this community of people in, I think it's the Minneapolis, St. Paul area. God help me if I'm wrong, but listen to it and then you'll know and you can listen to the authority on the subject, which is Joy Chase. But she, it's this group of people that are, you know, live in this community, and there's a tremendous influx of Somalian immigrants, legal immigrants coming mm-hmm. in, but it's completely, to their minds, completely changed the context of their community. And it's, they feel that, you know, these people who've been here long enough feel that they're not integrating fast enough. And they feel like maybe there should be some kind of moratorium on letting Somalians into that community. And, you know, the state, I think it was the state representative, but certainly a person in a position of authority was like, at a town meeting, and was like, it sounds to me like you're saying you want to have control over who gets to come here legally. And I'm telling you right now, you don't. That is the reason you are here is that our country welcomes people in. That is the reason you are here. And he really got very defensive about it. And I was pretty impressed with just how, you know, but then behind the scenes, and then I'll stop talking about this, he was like, there are people in this community that I've known for many years who are the kindest, mm-hmm. most warm, and they don't see it as racist, and they don't see it as nationalist. All they see it as is, hey, I'm just a citizen trying to do my thing, and now I feel like I'm not safe on some level, or I'm not. And so I felt so angry, because I was like, embrace these wonderful people that are coming in and trying to adapt to our country. But then I thought, and I don't feel good about this, but then I thought, well, what if my entire neighborhood was overrun with white supremacists? How would I feel? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Somalians are white supremacists. I'm just saying someone different from me who makes me a little nervous. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they're right to be made nervous, but that's the only thing I could think of that was like, if it was just like, you know, a situation where all of a sudden I was surrounded by people who were so different from me culturally, and I felt that energy, just like you were saying, well, how would I feel? What would I do? Would I want to say, hey, this isn't okay. I've worked hard to live here and have this life and feel, you know, included and want to be inclusive. And now I just have to leave. Is that that's my choice?
I mean, yeah, so my husband and I just recently moved from Boyle Heights, which is right outside the Arts District of downtown, Los Angeles, for anybody who's wondering what that is. And we had to move out of the Arts District, which is a really hip and groovy, very cool place, that we were bummed that we were moving out of, because it was so cool that we could walk to all these restaurants and all these different artists and creative types were around us. But our building got bought for a ridiculous amount of money, and a chef-driven restaurant was being put in. So we were pushed out, and my theater company was pushed out, and we were pushed out. And so we didn't want to be too far away from the Arts District. We're like, Boyle Heights is the next up-and-coming place. We found a really cool place over there, but it was just enough of up and coming that we felt so out of place there. Two white people moving into Boyle Heights and walking down the streets, I did not get smiles. They were very angry, and it's very volatile over there. They don't want, you know, the gentrification to happen. Yeah. And it's like,
which is understandable.
Like, I just got pushed out. Like, you know, and it's like, I'm not trying to change your neighborhood. I want to be a part of it, and yeah. I want to experience it. And like, I'd love to be your neighbor. And like, I'm giving you a smile because I'm like, we're just walking down the street together. I don't think I'm better than you. I don't think that you're better than like, but the like just hate towards us that I felt, I was just like, I didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I couldn't walk my dog at night. And so I was the fish out of water there. You know what I mean? And it's like, they didn't want me there. They didn't want my husband there. And I got dirty looks from mothers with babies in carriages. And our door was tagged all the time. And, you know, art galleries down there, they protest out in front of them all the time. And I mean, I get it. You've been in this neighborhood forever and you don't want it to change
And by now you've, like, seen enough to know, you know, and that's what, yeah, Brandon was writing a piece about certainly in San Francisco, it's the same thing. It's this idea of like, just that whole process of like, first come the artists, and maybe it used to be that you would be welcomed in. And I'm sure in still some communities that still exists. This is one isolated experience that, you know, you had, but at the same time, there's reason for that, because there is this sense of like, maybe it was okay for a while for the artists, but then everyone saw what happened after the sort of mavens, the artists came, and then this happens, and then this happens. You sort of see it as this thing that can't be stopped, and then you lose your home.
Yeah. And that's so valid, and obviously it happened to me, and then I went into it, and you know, but at the same time, and I'm sure this is really easy for someone like me to just like put out there, so I don't want to offend anyone, but like, change is always going to happen.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, and so it's like, you just kind of have to embrace it, and like, at least for me, that's what I hate change as a person. Like, it makes me very anxious. I get very depressed, or like, I hate moving. I hate all of that. But as soon as I like sort of just like break it down and like, Deborah, people move all the time.
Right.
Someone lived here before you, and before that, there was a whole, you know, it's just like, and the same thing in, you know, my parents' community, in the summer community. It's like, someone comes in and buys the house next door and knocks it down and makes an even bigger house, and everybody is up in arms, and it's like, but you added on to your house.
Yeah,
and like,
I know.
Back in the day, you guys were the ones that, like,
I agree.
It's just like, it's,
I agree that, like, I agree with that, and I think that the key, and then, if you really have to leave right now, we'll have to pick this MASH game up somehow in some other way, or I can just like knock it out. Do you have to be where you have to be right at 7? Or can you be there like 5 minutes later?
And I can be there 5 minutes later.
So I'm going to get right into that.
It's
then
down the street. So it's
It's like 1 minute away. But what I was just going to say is like, I would like to live in an America where I feel everyone can afford the luxury of accepting change and embracing it. And I just think we're not there yet.
No,
and I think that's
not
what you and I sort of want, is like, I want everyone to feel, I also have a lot of anxiety about change, but I am in a position where I can sort of figuratively and literally afford to deal with that anxiety, and for some families in some communities, that's not an option yet.
It's not.
So it'd be great to sort of feel like there's more of a progression towards like, I'm okay, you're okay, sort of thing.
Totally.
Which is very hippy dippy.
Totally hippy dippy.
But listen, but, like, we love it. You and I love each other. We bring
it's
that out in each other. So
it's a dream.
It's a dream. And we're going to hold on to it. Okay. So for my first MASH question, you know what? This is very unconventional. I never start with this one. Maybe very rarely I have, but let me get my guilt over adoring your husband just right out of the way. I'm going to rip off the Band-Aid. First one out. Alternate universe, partner, sexy times, relationship, marriage, one night stand, three people. They can be celebrities. They can be characters from books or movies. Any time, any age, young Jimmy Stewart, anybody. Three.
Okay. Any time, any age. Oh, goodness.
I know.
Can I say Jessica Rabbit?
Yes.
Because I'm fluid.
I don't think that you... Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't think you'd be the first. And I had some... I definitely was like, I'm so... I don't know how to feel about this.
Oh, my God. Boy, oh, boy, does she make me feel things. Yeah. Who else? Shia LaBeouf. I know it's such a weird one, but...
I really
adore
embrace
him.
Your honesty.
I
really,
adore him in
really,
so
really
many
really
weird ways.
Your honesty. Makes me happy.
For a really long time, it was James Franco, but I just don't think it will ever work for us. I'm trying to think of like that one. Han Solo.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you for exercising your improv muscle, because I know that these are impossible to come with up with off the cuff. Okay, next one is, you can go into, God knows I've talked about it enough on this podcast, jump into a movie, three, just get in there, hang out with the characters. You're not like reliving the plot, just three worlds that you can kind of go into whenever you want.
Okay, Gigi.
Wonderful.
Because, oh, goodness, love that movie. Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Wonderful.
But maybe Mary Poppins. I guess they're kind of the same worlds, aren't they?
Similar.
And, oh, another world that I would like to be in? Oh, I don't know. Oh, God. There's just so many that go through my head.
I know.
Oh,
it's a real painful process.
Harumph. Jeez Louise.
God, it even got a harumph. That's rough.
It is rough. Oh, The Princess Bride.
Great. You're not going to regret that. Listen.
Okay.
It's a great one. I know you'll think of a million. If again, I've said this before, but like if someone turned it right back on me just now, I'd be like,
I'm trying to go, like, and in my mind, I'm like, you need to go fast. You need to go fast. You need to not, like, wait to think about
that. Also because you have to go, so that really adds a lot of pressure to you. I apologize. Three foods that in this world are maybe not great for you to have in abundance for one reason or another, but in our alternate universe, not only are they delicious, but they are also good for you and will give you no physical ramifications of any kind.
Great. I would like to have some double stuffed Oreos, please. This is going to be a real easy one for me because I'm always a chubby kid.
Don't worry. I didn't include that nasty second F that does not curse the double stuff name. Double stuff with one F.
Ice cream.
Yeah. I sort of thought if she doesn't say ice cream,
never get enough ice cream.
Yeah.
Let's go with popovers.
Oh, wonderful.
They are wonderful.
Okay. Next one is let's do vacation homes, real places, but it's not an issue getting there. You get there. You can get there very quickly.
Great. I would, oh boy. Greece. Great. Like a Grecian island, please. No trouble getting there, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Great. Well, super. Maybe like Tahiti.
Great.
And I guess I'm picking like really beachy places. So let's throw something else in there that's not so beachy.
Great.
Maybe Sweden.
Great. Oh, listen, good choice. They got some good stuff going on over there. Okay. Next one is let's do superpowers.
Okay, I'd really like to be invisible. Great. I'd really like to fly, and I'd really like to read people's minds. I've thought about this many times.
Wonderful.
Not because of your podcast, but just like sitting by myself.
Oh, sure. I'm scared of reading minds. Okay.
Can I change that one to time travel?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. I just feel like, I mean, I know you could do it electively, but
yeah.
I'm afraid I would read someone's mind at the wrong time and it would be something they were just like getting off their chest in their mind and then they would never have wanted anyone to know that that's what they were thinking.
But if you could read people's minds, you'd know when to.
You would know the intention behind it. That's an interesting point. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, next one is let's do mythical pet. So something, and it doesn't have to be like a dragon. It can just be like animals that it's not practical for you to have for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. Or it can be like Falcor, the luck dragon.
Yeah. That's so weird that was like the first one that popped into my mind.
Oh yeah.
So does a Pillsbury Doughboy count? Because
100%. 100%.
The Snuggle Teddy Bear from Snuggles. These are real Christmas wish lists that I made, and I was very disappointed I did not get them.
Oh.
That's
wonderful. I wish I had one more I could immediately think of that's like...
So both of those. And then, I do love Falcor, but I think... Lassie.
Great. She's a classic. She's a classic, guys.
I love Lassie.
Classic. Okay, let's do...
No, Mr. Ed. I want him more than Lassie.
Gotta get the talking horse. Okay, then also three. This is not superhero stuff. This is just like very basic skill kind of stuff. But it could still be like martial arts. But like three things that you wake up that you've downloaded Matrix style the next morning. Like tomorrow you get up and you're like, oh my God, I'm suddenly amazing at blank, blank, and blank.
Mm-hmm. A gymnastics.
Great.
I still can't do a cartwheel and that bothers me.
No, if I could either. Okay. I think it's I'd okay. be like, I'm so dizzy.
Maybe like, I don't know. When I watch the Olympics, man, I wish I was good, proficient at some of those things. You know what? I'd really like to be great at an instrument. Maybe like, you know, like the fiddle.
Great. Oh, me too.
I'd like to be like fluent in like six languages.
Great. I just put fluent in six. Like yep. I wouldn't, I mean, I guess I do know what it is. I wrote it. Okay. Final category. Let's do. Now I'm putting too much pressure on myself and we got to get you out of here. Let's do three. This is different. Three places that it would be fun to shoot something is different than, very different than vacation.
Okay.
And you could put it into the context of like, oh, I wanted like I'm shooting like a you know a bodice ripper in Scotland in a castle. You know what I mean? Like you can sort of give it a genre, give it like a flavor too.
I think doing like that's where I was going. I was like London. I want to do like a period piece in London.
Great. Let me put that down.
Ugh, The Crown. Let me tell you, people. If you haven't watched it yet on Netflix, I just started. Wonderful. John Lithgow. You are a magical.
I just started watching Versailles, so we're sort of in similar.
I love period stuff.
Yeah.
Ugh, too damn bad I couldn't be on Downton Abbey anymore.
I know.
Where else? I think maybe. I don't know. People seem to have a really great time shooting in Hawaii.
Yeah. What's not to love?
Yeah, they all just really dig it. And
what kind of what kind of show or movie would it be?
Action.
Great. Great.
Like out on that cruise speedboat.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
I think shooting in like a place like Turkey or mm-hmm. or you know just some ancient sort mm-hmm. of
ruined
city sort of.
And what kind of movie is that?
You know, I mean, I wouldn't say no to being in something like Game of Thrones.
Oh, sure.
Situation,
I'll put fantasy sort of adventure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Like really The Mummy.
Yeah. There you go.
Very different than Game of Thrones.
Dream but like, movie. Okay, here, I'm going to get you out of here, so tell me when to stop. I'm going to start now.
Stop.
Okay. Pause this, do the fastest math in all of time. Also, it's not math, and I'll be back with you on 100% guaranteed MASH future. Okay, I'm going to reveal your MASH future. It really is dark and sexy in here, so I hope I can read everything that I just circled.
But I look beautiful, so it's
you
fine.
You look absolutely radiant, as you would if it were very bright in here indeed. Okay, number one, I want to congratulate... I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in this, and I'm real excited about it. I want to congratulate you, first of all, on your beautiful house in Sweden.
Great.
Well played. But not only do you get to enjoy this wonderful house in Sweden, you also can jump into the Princess Bride world, yes. Which is magic. That's magic.
It's so magic.
And it's wonderful with so many lovable characters. You can also, are shooting an amazing sort of fantasy adventure, The Mummy-esque movie in some place like Turkey or maybe like Bulgaria, someplace like steeped in history.
Istanbul.
Very transformative, sort of like, oh, wow, where am I? So that's wonderful. You also can time travel, so not bad. So now you can just sort of, that's like it. Wishing for all the wishes. You can sort of get all over the place and go anywhere. You can, all of this stuff, all of this wild adventure is definitely going to leave you hungry. I want you to know that you can have unlimited popovers.
great. They're so good.
Limited popovers. And you are, and also all of this traveling is going to be very helpful because you are fluent in 6 languages.
Oh, good.
So that's going to come in very handy. I'll tell you what, it's a good thing you still speak English, though, because that's what Mr. Ed speaks. And he's your wonderful companion.
Oh, my goodness.
And as if that weren't enough, you also have a companion with the sexiest, most hourglass figure
ever
existed. I'm talking about a woman who works purple eyeshadow in a red dress in a way I've never seen before or since, with beautiful, beautiful cascading red hair. Mm-hmm. Miss Jessica Rabbit.
Yes.
Sorry, Roger.
I will be so excited.
You're going to be so oversexed.
Oh, am I ever. Oh, am I ever. At first when you were like, and your companion's going to be Mr. Ed, and I was like, did I pick him as my sex partner?
I wouldn't put it past myself to make him my husband.
But that was odd, Deborah. You really jumped the gun. Should have thought about it a little bit longer.
You got the hot cartoon
Jessica
goddess.
Rabbit. Yes, please.
Deborah Baker Jr., I adore you.
Oh, I adore you. And I hope that you do have me back where we don't have to feel rushed. Or
I will. Listen, I could dig even deeper into about 1,000 different things.
We really could.
But we still got in we got in over an hour, so I think we did very well. And we'll get you out to the UCB where you frequently can be seen. You are on Twitter at Deborah Baker Jr., which is also where you are now on Instagram since mm-hmm. your name has recently become that on Instagram. You are on Stand Against Evil with me.
We yes, I am.
Have a wonderful time with the rest of the gang. And I'll talk to you guys next time on the podcast.
Yes, yeah.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.